Hello, welcome to your meditation practice as part of the Open Heart Project. My name is Susan Piver. I am very happy to see you. I am very happy to continue our discussion. I thought to make this because this particular series, for many reasons, mostly we can always use some more insight into how to be compassionate in a world that tests that ability at every turn. But especially right now, because we're all so tired, I think. I notice it in myself. I notice it in so many people I connect with on a regular basis. Everybody's really tired. When we're in uncharted territory, two things, one could say, are also present. The first is when we're tired, it's harder to be compassionate. Our temper is more on edge. Our reactivity is less workable. And we're just more likely to write others off because we're just tired. And we don't have a lot of bandwidth for expanding and opening and inviting and gentleness and fierceness because we're tired. Makes sense. The second thing that is also present is endless possibility. Because for many of us, and if this is not you, be patient, we'll move on. When things are shaken up and unknown and unknowable, we cannot revert to habitual patterns because they don't match our world anymore. Instead, we have to be awake and observant and in a state of continual experimentation with who we are and what is happening and what is possible. So when we're shaken out of our habitual patterns, we're also shaken into a realm of possibility because we can't fall back on our old habits. It doesn't feel good. It feels uncomfortable. It doesn't feel like, yay, there's so much possibility. It feels like, wait, all the things I'm used to doing and expecting and imagining and liking and disliking, that's all shaken up right now. So while on one hand, boo, on the other hand, yay, something very awake is happening because we're not sleeping in our habitual patterns. So in that sense, while compassion is harder, because we're just a little more temperamental, compassion is also way more possible because we cannot wall ourselves off in a safe, cozy world. Although I hope you have moments of that and will be able to feel that you're in a safe, cozy world, not walled off, but strengthened by something stable. Anyway, so it's a good time to examine these four qualities that cultivate the mind of compassion. The first we talked about is called affection for the world, which doesn't mean liking everything or pretending to like everything is usually what we do when we think we should like everything. Rather, it means being present for everything. That's the sign of affection here. And the second quality that we're going to talk about today is called faith in the right situations. Faith in the right situations cultivates the mind of compassion. So what does this mean? Let's break it down. Faith has very interesting connotations in the Buddhist world. Outside the Buddhist world, it usually means believing in something. And okay, cool. In the Buddhist view, faith does not mean any of those things. When it comes to beliefs, as a matter of fact, those are considered obstacles to faith, actually. Although in other situations, belief and faith are considered synonymous, here they're considered oppositional. Because faith here has more to do with faith in now. Now, faith in the present moment, faith in being awake, faith in not knowing, because that's usually the situation that we're in. So faith in right here, faith in right now, which just disappeared and is back again. So faith in that, which just disappeared, and so on and so on and so on. So that's one way of looking at faith through the lens of Buddhism, faith in now. And the other definition of faith that I want to offer for your consideration is faith here means acknowledging what you've learned, what you've practiced, what you've studied, what you have come to know personally as true because you've investigated it, and then living that, putting it into action, not leaving it on the shelf of intellect, but bringing it in to the way you conduct yourself in the world, your inner world, and the outer world. So faith means, just a short recap, faith in present, which just changed, and the faith that is the manifestation of what you know, bringing it into your actual life, not leaving it again on the shelf. So that's the faith part. Multiple ways of looking at it in the right situations. Giving yourself to right now. That's the right, always the right situation. Sometimes it feels good, sometimes it doesn't feel good. Understood. The right situations are not what we project onto reality. The right situations are the reality itself, which has texture and vibrancy and qualities that are constantly moving. So it's beyond our intellect. It's beyond our belief systems. But it includes, interestingly, our emotional life. That's often what we're trying to avoid and therefore create wrong situations. The right situation does not exclude you and all the things you feel and all the ways that you are. It includes all of that. So sometimes I think that when people consider Buddhism and the ideal state of mind, it's some kind of complacent, unruffled stasis. And no, sometimes, but no, that's not what we're aiming for. We're not aiming to be unruffled. We're aiming to be friggin' real, including this and everything that this feels. So emotions are not excluded, even though there's a lot of thought that, oh, if you're Buddhist or Buddhist-y or Buddhist adjacent, you can't be angry, you can't be disappointed, you can't be afraid, you can't be depressed. Well, you know what? Ixnay. You can be all those things because they're happening right now, and then they're gone. They're happening right now, and then they're gone. So the present moment, as I imagine it, because I am not a Buddha, let me just remind you of that in case you need reminding, is rich and nuanced and potent and lousy with display. The right situation includes massive life force and vitality, as opposed to something more chill. Although chill can be included too. Something to consider, or some things to consider. Now, I feel inspired to just tell you what I have faith in. In addition to the things that I described, faith in my ability and your ability to be compassionate, and the faith of living the Dharma, which I, and I'm sure you too, try to do to the best of our abilities. I have faith in the three jewels, which are considered the sort of the three headlights, a vehicle with three headlights that guide us to full enlightenment. Or actually, it's more accurate to say that illuminate the fact that we are already completely enlightened. These are the tools of the spiritual journey. And nobody has to be a Buddhist to take advantage of them, by the way. The three jewels are, first, the first one is called Buddha. Buddha means awake. So it doesn't necessarily mean someone outside of us who is more awesome than us. Although, let's face it, probably true. But it means you're awake. That's the first jewel. Some sense of confidence in your own wakefulness, or at least a willingness to explore and experience your own fully awakened mind, which is happening right now. Oh, and right now, and right now. Second jewel is called Dharma, which means path or wisdom or way. And the third jewel is called Sangha, which means community. So my faith personally in my own wakefulness is, okay, I'll take your word for it. That's kind of how I feel about that one. However, my faith in the Dharma, in my case, the Buddha Dharma, in your case, the Dharma may be something else. That's good. My faith in the Dharma that I've been studying and attempting to practice now for close to 30 years, I don't know why. It's resolute. And here, faith doesn't feel like I believe in it. It feels like I trust it. I trust it. It is vast beyond my comprehension. That's a fact. I will never understand it. So it's not like, yeah, I've studied the Dharma and I've made some notes and I have extracted a code for living. It's much more wild than that. Much more exciting, confusing, and powerful than, oh, I've locked something down. Next. It's living. That's my experience of the Dharma, the teachings. I trust those teachings. Not because I understand them, I'll just say that again, but because my whole life has changed since I started practicing these teachings. So anyway, Buddha, Dharma, Sangha, I have faith in us. I have faith in you. I have faith in what we, and I don't just mean you and me, but I mean we, meaning humanity, can do and be for each other. Although we have a long ass way to go, I have faith in Sangha. It's because there's magic in being together. There's magic in it. I have faith in those things. In fact, all I have found in my now near 30 years of practice and study is being continually challenged and continually exhilarated. So I have faith in the three jewels. And I invite you to have faith in the three jewels as you define them. Faith in your own wakefulness. When we sit down to meditate, that is an expression of such faith. And we're going to do that in a moment. Faith in your Dharma, your path, the wisdom that speaks to you. Don't hesitate. If you find wisdom that speaks to you, rush into its arms. And let it hold you, study it, get in fights with it, make it central in your life. It's the center of your heart. It's the most important thing. And when you embrace some body of wisdom, whatever it might be for you, then the rest of the things that we think are important in our life, because they are, our relationships, our work, creativity, making money, having a place to live, all those things, tend to cohere in some way. Don't take my word for that. And I hope I'm not rambling, but do not take my word for that. And then finally, Sangha, community, even if you're the most introverted person in the world, and I put myself in that ballpark, It is essential. In fact, this is the most important one. To feel connected to others as you practice and study your Dharma. And that can look like any number of things. I trust that you'll be able to figure out a way to do that that makes sense for you. So, faith in the right situations has a lot to do with living your truth, waking up in each moment, giving yourself completely, feeling everything with a sense of gentleness and self-embrace, as opposed to trying to be someone who looks like a practitioner. To be a practitioner is to lean into the situations of your life with a lot of courage and not knowing. So the path of compassion, this is the last thing I'll say before we practice, is a path of warriorship. It's not a path of nicey-niceness, although sometimes that's included. Rather, it's a path of being awake. Compassion has less to do with being nice and more to do with being fiercely awake than anything I can think of. So as we cultivate the mind of compassion together, remember that it includes all of who you are, brilliant and messy, chaotic and fabulous, and is a gesture of absolute wakefulness. Some things to think about. Okay, let's practice. Take a good posture, which means sit up straight, but not stiff. Uplifted. The legs are crossed loosely in front of you if you're seated on the floor, or your feet are flat on the floor if you're in a chair or sitting on the sofa. Feel heavy from the waist down, rooted, firm, like a warrior. And feel soft and uplifted from the waist up, blossoming with sense of aliveness, rooted and alive. At the same time, you're just sitting there. So let the hands rest on the legs, palms down. Let the front body soften. The shoulders relax. The mouth is closed. Breath is natural, in and out through the nose. You already know how to breathe, so there's no breathing instruction. The eyes are open, and the gaze is cast down to a comfortable spot in front. And let the eyes be soft, with a sense that vision streams from the eyes like the rays of the sun, and like the rays of the sun, it mixes with the space in front, rather than laser focuses on something in the space. Let your attention come to rest on the breath, the rhythm of the breath, which means feeling the breath, feeling the body breathe. We're not noticing it, we're feeling it. Feel the inhale. And really let yourself dissolve on the feeling of the exhale. Dissolve into the space in front on the exhale. The next inhale just happens. And again, let yourself dissolve out into the space in front. There's a sense that the out-breath is like saying, ah. Well, you're not saying ah, but there's a sense of that on the out-breath. Breathing in, out. Your mind will continue to make thoughts, no problem, no big deal. Most of them will just come and go on their own. You don't have to do anything about them because you've remained connected, at least to some degree, to the feeling of the body breathing. However, if you lose that feeling, you become absorbed in a line of thought to the point where you are no longer aware of your body breathing at all. That's actually quite good because you just woke up in the middle of your own mind and saw what was going on. It's very, a lot of utility in that. Here, the instruction is notice that. Don't just shove it away. Notice it. Label it thinking silently, if that helps. Then just let go with a very soft gesture. Gently come back to this breath and begin again, feeling the body breathe in and dissolve out. So we'll sit together in silence for a little while until you hear the bell. Thank you so much for your practice. Thank you for practicing with me.